We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. That fine gentleman over there, this beautiful Sunday morning, the one, the only, the incomparable, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm good. I'm not even tired. I was up at 5:30 local to watch everything I could possibly watch that I didn't yesterday and Friday and Thursday. And I guess the weekend's not even complete yet. But a good mix of coffee, excitement, and knowing that I get to physically see you if you're watching this live, if you're that type of Patreon verballer. I have so many things to say that will be proven to be moot or worthless after next week or the week after. Yeah. Because there is a certain degree of week one, not overreactions, but like, I think this matters. I don't know. That I love. I treasure it.
Well, per our very own Travis May, who writes on solidverbal.com every Monday, there were 62 cross-competition level games this week, which means FCS against FBS, Group of Five versus Power Five, et cetera, et cetera. 11 of the lower divisional opponents won, which comes out to about 17%.
That's great. And they all happened in the Pac-12 North. They all the math checks out.
They all happened in the Pac-12 North. It was not a good evening. Yeah, I don't know if you were greeted warmly by what you saw in the Pac-12 North, but we're going to get into all of that. Hello, welcome back. I'm Ty. He's Dan. Again, this is the Solid Verbal. This is our week one reaction show. And on this show, we're going to do a bunch of things. Obviously, we're going to go through all of the action that was in week one. There are still a few games to be played. Obviously, we won't be able to cover the Notre Dame game nor the Louisville Ole Miss game on Monday evening. We'll get to those when we do our Wednesday preview show for week two.
And you know what, by the way, if something crazy happens in those games, if either one of those games, something just bonkers happens, already Lane Kiffin has COVID and he's not coaching in the Ole Miss Louisville game, we'll just make a video and we'll post it to youtube.com/thesolidverbal.
Correct.
So we'll get you covered.
We'll find some way to produce the content you want. Otherwise, we have reverbs. I'm assuming we have dudes. We have a teeming selection of Dvorak drive charts that we could read, that you could read as part of this very broadcast. So
I'm ready.
I want you to talk through what the selection process was whenever we get around to it. But before we do, why don't we start where everybody wants us to start? We've been starting here for years on end. People dialed in 408-VERBAL-1, 408-837-2251 as they were watching all the action in this here college football week one. Here's what you had to say.
Clemson, Georgia, game of the week. After the year that we just had, there's no way the football gods would curse us with a boring game. Right?
Good morning, Dan and Ty. This is Kevin in Nashville.
Hey, guys. It's Tom from Georgia.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Ty. Kevin from Washington, D.C.
Hey, guys. This is Shay from Madison, Wisconsin.
Well, hi, guys. It's Blake in Brooklyn.
Hey, this is Will in Maine.
Dan, Ty, it's ya boy, Connor from Dallas. And I gotta say, I miss college football so much. Oh, my gosh, this Saturday. Woo!
The universe has gifted me a day off. I'm going to prepare my backyard with a hammock, a grill, a projector screen, so that I can watch not only a couple of games tomorrow night, but the first full Saturday of the college football season. Let's go!
Man, today felt like college football Saturday for the first time in a long time. It was great. I had my remote in my hand. I was changing channels. I was looking for the best game at the best time. It was great. It was great. College football is back, baby, and I am so happy. Do you remember the fourth night of September? DJU was being dismembered.
My Georgia Bulldogs pull off a win over Clemson, and that poor man DJ is going to have a nightmare setting back that Georgia defense. Go Dogs!
Apparently Clemson runs the triangle offense. It only got 3 points. Go Dogs!
And I'm wondering if it's Big Stinko more than Big Stinko.
By the time I finish this sentence, DJ Uiagalelei will have been sacked again.
Hey, Oklahoma fans, are you sure you want to join the SEC whenever you give up 35 points to Tulane, who couldn't even practice this week because of hurricanes? Are you sure you want to join the SEC? I'm just curious. If you're sure, think about it.
Is Tulane the best program in the state of Louisiana?
Can this podcast just break down that Max Johnson no-look behind the back shovel pass?
James Franklin just called a timeout at the half and, what, mid-game James Franklin?
Does Penn State have a Sean Clifford problem?
I got this recipe for Badger recently. It's really tough, really gritty. They give you a few heart attacks, but at the end of the day, we are 1-0, baby!
Had my hopes up for the Hoosiers, but the only good thing they did Saturday at Kinnick Stadium was wave at the kids at the end of the first quarter. Yikes.
Last season already feels like a mirage. I finally remember what it feels like to be an Indiana Hoosier fan again. Pain.
I ran just over 9 miles in 65 and a half minutes this morning. So nothing Purdue does tonight is going to bother me at all today.
Guys, I don't know what's going on, but somehow Maryland's football stadium is actually full.
I don't want to over-exaggerate, but I think Rutgers wants Bama. Are you rah-rah, baby?
Does Mac Brown have a Justin Fuente problem?
Can't tell you how much fun I had today. I tailgated. I went to a game. Life is returning to normal. Let's hope it stays this way all season. Hail the Pit.
Tonight, my daughter is playing flute in the Lamar Band, the showcase of Southeast Texas. And fellas, I am one proud daddy.
Big Fresno State Bulldogs fan. Watched them fall to the Ducks today. But let's go ahead and get ourselves ranked anyway. We dominated large portions of that game.
Dan, Ty, I gotta say, there's nothing like watching Kansas rush the field after beating an FCS opponent. That just warms the heart.
Ty, I think you still need to eat a banana. Because those Hokies just went out and won a big one, baby! Banana bet!
All right, all right. Pipe down, pipe down.
Did you see, by the way, Alyssa Lang from the SEC Network, who I think was broadcasting the Kentucky game? She took down at least a bite of the banana with peel on. So it's a thing, man.
I saw that. We will talk about that when we get to that game. I have some thoughts.
Okay, so do you want to start with the Applebee's commercial? Is that what we're...
What is that?
It's awful. It's truly bad. And eat at Applebee's. I don't care where you eat. I don't care what you eat, but that song is terrible.
Man, I saw everybody tweeting about this commercial. And then I saw it and I was like, oh, I get this. I get the tweets now.
Yeah, this is where, of course, we're starting. Not any of the huge games because I've already derailed the show. But every season we get a commercial that seems bad and then we talk ourselves into it and then it becomes bad again, whether it's the, you know, the Pitbull stuff or the Fansville. I think that's all Dr. Pepper. But there's always that commercial or like, oh, man, the Heisman House. By the way, dogs must be going bonkers. Three doorbell rings in a commercial.
Can confirm.
Okay, Ty, you can take over the show. I'm sorry.
Why don't we start at the very, very top? What were your general impressions of week one? We're going to get into Georgia, Clemson, and Bama, Miami, and Penn State, Wisconsin, and UCLA, LSU, all these big games. I mentioned at the top how it seems like those cross divisional matchups were actually quite interesting. Travis, just in the course of us doing the live stream here, fed another one to me that I thought was really interesting and really telling and provides further context just on the clunker fest, if you want to call it that, that we saw in week one. In addition to those 11 games that were won by the lower divisional opponent, seven more of those games were one possession games where the favorite just barely won. So it was like, this was the theme all throughout college football. I don't know if it was the COVID hangover from the weird year that was. I don't know if it was just normal week one jitters, but a lot of clunkers out there. Good high level offense was really at a premium. That's why I think we'll talk a little bit more about UCLA, and why I thought they were really impressive. What happened in the Pac-12 was just like inconscionable.
Unconscionable, yeah.
It was just mind-blowing. There were other games around college football that Iowa State, like, what's up with that? I don't know. Like, awesome to have college football back. We heard how great it was to have the fans back no fewer than 2 million times in watching the action that was yesterday. But aside from the fact that college football is back and in, like, normal form, the level of play I would expect would increase dramatically between week one and week two, because it just was not quite there in week one, albeit very, very fun.
Open up your fifth grade lunch bag and get ready to dip in some clunkaroos. Yeah, that's what it was. It was clunk rock. I don't know, whatever pun you want to do with that, and just tenuously. You can ask a Georgia Tech fan. You can ask a Vanderbilt fan. You can ask a Washington fan. You can ask a Cal fan. You can ask a Wazoo fan. You can go across the country. Win that clunker. Win that clunker. And it's expected that week one is going to give us some raw, unrealized, not fully shapen, inconsistent, undisciplined, all of that. You got to win them. As somebody who watched his team win a clunker. 1-0 is better than 0-1, Ty.
It is.
1-0 is always better than 0-1. And look, I watched the complete day and days of football as best as I could, which was, you know, hours of, I probably watched, I don't know, 20 hours of football these past few days. Nobody's good.
Not right? yet.
Like, nobody's good. Like, even Alabama has a couple of issues. Not real issues,
right.
But aside from like three teams, nobody's feeling amazing. So going into the week or going out of the week, mostly nobody's who they're going to be. That is largely a good thing, but for some teams it might not be, but nobody's good right now. And that's okay. 1-0 is always better than 0-1. We have our Win Your Clunkers shirt ready to roll.
It is ready to roll.
Various hues. We're good to go. Later in the season, Win Your Clunkers. Take a deep breath. Exhale. I know I did after getting worked up during that Oregon matchup against Fresno State that they snuck out. Win Your Clunkers, and it's okay.
Yep. Bama, UCLA, just play the game now, and we'll get the whole thing over with.
That's true.
Save ourselves a bunch of
time. UCLA fans are pumped. Sure.
Let's start, though, with the showpiece of the weekend. We've been talking this game up since we saw it on the schedule. Many, many months in the working here on our show alone. Georgia-Clemson. This was the neutral site game. They played it in Charlotte at Bank of America Stadium. Exactly zero offensive touchdowns in this game, Dan.
Correct. Factually correct.
And strangely enough, for as adverse to that setup as I usually am, I found this game highly entertaining.
Yeah, I thought it was mostly entertaining.
Yeah,
because the defenses lived up to their billing, but I personally need more in the way of adjustments or understanding of what is and isn't working, which is an adjustment element, and creativity. And I know it's week one, and these teams, these offenses specifically, are not going to look like what they're going to look like in mid-October, which is a great thing for Clemson. And a good thing for Georgia, because I think Georgia might have more of an excuse given what wasn't on the field for Georgia's offense.
Right.
But there were stretches of this game where, like, man, they are laying the lumber. Also, I wish there would be a 26-yard pass at some point.
I know. I know. This was a defensive battle through and through.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I think the point we discussed on the previous show ended up being the right one. It was Georgia's ability to generate pressure, in some cases without actually blitzing, that made a huge impact on this game. 7 sacks of DJ Uiagalelei.
Yeah.
A lot to overcome. It's a lot to overcome. I don't know if it was that his guys weren't getting open down the field. I don't know if the plays were taking just too long to develop. I don't know if it was just that good of a pass rush by Georgia, but the Clemson offensive line did not have any answers for that front 7 with Georgia. And as a result, you saw a couple things happen. You know, you saw DJU throw a pick at one point in the second quarter. That was really the only touchdown in the game. 74-yarder went back the other way. Beyond that, no offensive touchdowns to speak of. You also saw at one point later in the game, just because of that front, Clemson all but abandoned the run. Outside of DJU, scrambled around a little bit, taking some sacks, which shows up on the box score. Not a whole lot of rushing attempts, not much of an attempt to stay super balanced on that
point
Clemson side of the ball.
Including sacks. 0.1 yards. I don't know what 10% of 3 feet is, but it's not in feet.
Yeah. So. And you know, on the Georgia side, we talk about Clemson and some of their struggles on offense because the Georgia defense is very good, especially up front. Georgia's offense struggled too. They just achieved a little bit more balance, but they were very risk averse. At one point, I was thinking to myself, are we watching the Jake Fromm era Georgia football again? It was just that kind of game. It was going to have to be that kind of game as we got into the flow of it with how good both defenses were. Just 4.5 yards per attempt for JT Daniels. We didn't get any answers as to who his go-to guys are going to be out wide. You know, like Brock Bowers, the tight end, had a pretty good game. He got most of the
freshman
work
in
the passing game. But beyond that, out wide, it wasn't a game where they took a lot of chances. If you're giving a game ball out, if you're Georgia, I guess to Zamir White, who had the most...
I'd give it to N'Kobe Dean, but yeah, on the offense, Zamir White. Yeah.
On the offense, for sure. N'Kobe Dean is great on defense. We can talk more about that if you want, but Zamir White had a couple big runs to really get things going. So just a defensive slugfest. Usually that's not my brand of football, but in this case, maybe it was because it was sheer novelty of being week one, trying to figure out who these teams were. I don't know. I found the game very entertaining despite the fact that there wasn't a whole lot of scoring. So I thought a really good way to start out the season, and this is a game that we've talked so much about that it was good to actually see how these teams stacked up.
It is fascinating that if you had asked Clemson fans, even the last couple of years, like what's the position group that hasn't been recruited and developed on the level of others, I think unanimously they would point to offensive line. Right. If you look at the guys that have been drafted, the guys who've been all ACC, all conference, it's up and down the offense, up and down the defense on all three levels of that defense. Receiver obviously has popped. Quarterback has popped. The offensive line has not been consistent. I think it's Robbie Caldwell's the offensive line coach. You remember him from Turkey insemination fame way back when during his time at Vanderbilt. But it's a weakness. It's a Clemson weakness that we saw Ohio State take advantage of in the playoff last year. Clemson now on a losing streak, to be clear.
Wow.
On a losing streak, which is wild. And I anticipate this being something that obviously the coaching staff knows, but DJU was uncomfortable for 4 straight quarters.
He was.
Fully uncomfortable. There were weird snap issues. There were timing issues. He was flushed constantly. He had... like half a second at times because of how well Georgia got home. And again, like you mentioned, not with a lot of help, not a lot of blitzing all of the time. It was just the sheer violence of the Georgia pass rush that got home a lot. So, yeah, back to the drawing board for Clemson to figure out a way to scheme around that. I'm sure they knew going in Georgia was going to present a pretty huge challenge there. But, yeah, this Clemson team offensively, it looked completely lost. And I get it's Georgia, and I get that. I mean, you claim this might be the best defensive line in the country after, you know, watching and previewing and all that, but this is Clemson. They have to have answers. They have to have answers that results in a touchdown.
No.
A touchdown. We are not asking a lot of a playoff caliber team, and this goes both ways. A touchdown on offense. And so I came away ultimately, I guess, neutral on Georgia. It's impressive to win a game without scoring an offensive touchdown, but at the same time, you've recorded on an unprecedented level for your program. And even knowing the guys that are out of this game, you know, George Pickens, Washington, the tight end, whatever, there are still guys on this offense. We're talking about, we came into the season saying JT Daniels is the best returning SEC quarterback, and we can't lead a touchdown drive?
Yeah. Like,
granted, Clemson's defense, excellent, excellent, excellent. A touchdown drive. That worries me, especially, and I know we're going to get here, especially considering what Georgia has on the other side of the conference, potentially in the championship game.
Man.
Especially with how fast Jameson Williams is and how comfortable immediately Bryce Young looks and how good, but not great, but deep that running back group looks for Alabama. That's what we're comparing right now, Georgia and Clemson against. And I came away just sort of
unclear. Unmoved. No, yeah. Unclear, unmoved. I think it's all relative to week one.
And it's week one. Week one, week one, week one, week one.
Both teams will improve.
Yeah.
But the criticism cuts both ways for sure on the offensive side of the ball. Georgia wins 10-3. 10-3, yeah. Very low scoring game. Hope you bet the under. Only one member of this broadcasting duo took Georgia.
That's true.
Got That's lucky true. This week,
one,
but
one member also told you to bet against LSU like 7 months ago,
seven months ago.
Last night's game. So, you know, take
and I needed a dog to confirm it for me. We'll get to that one momentarily. Yeah. Let's talk about another so-called clunker, if you will. This one was earlier in the day on Saturday, Penn State 16, Wisconsin 10. How much of this game did you get a chance to watch?
I watched all of it. I watched most of it live and I caught everything that I missed after the fact.
Man,
so this I am prepared to talk about Ish.
Yeah, this is another bad offensive game. This is a genuinely bad offensive game. And it wasn't so much the fact that, I mean, both defenses are going to be fine. They're going to be very good. I don't think either rises to the level of Clemson or Georgia, frankly. But for what they are, both defenses are very good. Both offenses, though, they got some stuff to work out. Gus and Joel Klatt on the call were bending over backwards to try and sell this one as like a premier defensive slugfest. It was really only that defensive, guys, because the offenses were bad. Just brutal to watch. The reason that Penn State won this game was because between the two teams, they were the only one that decided after halftime to make some adjustments.
Sure.
And they're going to throw it a little bit more downfield. They were going to get away from some, but whatever they were doing the first half, I don't know what that was. But they stopped doing that and they started throwing a little bit more.
Yeah.
And they had some success. Wisconsin did not change a damn thing. It was the same thing from kickoff until the final gun. They didn't change a damn thing. Ches Malusi, for his part, the transfer from Clemson, new starting running back, I thought he ran with burst. Gus kept saying, puts a foot in the ground, and then he makes a cut, and he, you know, a really good one cut back. I thought he looked the part, definitely justified that decision, but Wisconsin didn't really change anything. And then when they got down into scoring position in the red zone, they were really bad. Really bad. These are things they need to work out. They know it. But they fumbled. They threw a pick. They had a kick block. There were a couple other times down there that they just couldn't convert. And between, I think, Penn State making some adjustments and Wisconsin really struggling in the red zone to figure itself out, that was the difference. That was the difference. If you watch nothing in this game, those are really the two key elements that I think swung it in Penn State's direction.
Yeah, these are not new players for either of these teams on offense. You know, Graham Mertz has now been in this program. There's a ton of experience on the offensive line. Ches Malusi, new as the full-time new starting running back. He carried it like 30 times, right? But the receivers, the tight end, like this is a team that should be in sync by now offensively with what they're trying to do. And with what they're trying to do and how they're trying to do it, it just didn't work. Now, we might come to learn that Penn State's defense is incredible, and the secondary certainly looked the part. They got after Graham Mertz. I think that was probably a pleasant surprise to you and other Penn State fans that the pass rush was able to really cause some trouble for Wisconsin, and that was sort of an unknown going in. But yeah, there was a sloppiness to Wisconsin that we have not come to expect, at least before last year, that they would just get things done in bigger moments, that they would trust their scheme and that they would trust their players and their experience. And Wisconsin just didn't look the part on offense. Now, defensively, it's a different story. Now, they gave up those big plays, a couple of big passes to Jahan Dotson. Parker Washington was impressive. I came away really impressed with Noah Kane in some bigger moments. I got some like Clyde Edwards-Alaire vibes, a couple like checkdowns.
I think Clyde's a little quicker.
No. Clyde's definitely quicker. I'm talking about just that ability in big moments to make plays where you get a swing pass on 3rd and 5 and break a tackle and get 6.5. That just sort of like the things that keep, that just end up with wins. And so I came away impressed with Noah Cain in that regard. He's not Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But I think Sean Clifford, after a bad first half, bounced back nicely and was patient and let Jahan Dotson somehow mysteriously get open behind.
Yeah, let the best receiver, one of the best receivers in all of college football, just scamper open down the middle of the field.
And Penn State gave Wisconsin an opening to win this game at the end of the game.
In true James Franklin fashion, you knew they would.
It was, and they miss an extra point to open up the win, open up the window for the win. And ultimately, it's Graham Mertz under pressure, overthrowing a couple balls, one of which ended in the game-sealing interception for Penn State. So a clunker for sure for both teams. Somebody had to win. And you know what? Penn State off on the right foot, because starting your season at Camp Randall,
brutal.
I don't care what the Wisconsin offense looks like.
Yeah.
Tough, tall task. Get out of there with a W. What one of the members of the show said. Penn State in the under. That's it. Penn State in the under.
Penn State in the under. Yeah. Now look, I echo everything you said. I am very curious to watch Sean Clifford. You know I'm not a Clifford fan. I thought you're statement was 100% right. He came out second half. He did show more patience. They definitely switched up the game plan. That adjustment went a long way. He still misses too many throws, though.
Yeah.
He still misses too many throws. If he connected with Dotson on one really long one that went for a game-breaking touchdown, there were maybe two or three more out there. And he needs to, I don't know if he was amped up or what. I don't know if it's just his game. I lean the latter, but
sure.
I'll remain patient with the kid in this new system. If he connects on a few of those other long balls that are out there, it's a different story. The game is much more in Penn State's direction, because Wisconsin, again, did not change a damn thing. I'd imagine that's very frustrating for Badger fans on the backside of that game. But 16-10 is your final. Not a lot of offense for a while. 16-10 looked like a pipe dream, because in the first half, it was just brutal offensively. Absolutely brutal.
Yeah. The good news is they at least get Ball State to get a little bit more comfortable rhythmically before Auburn. I don't know what to expect out of Auburn, but that game's at home. And, you know, I think right now, if you're a Penn State fan, I think more so you're circling that Iowa game before the bye week than Auburn.
Okay.
But, you know, you can't overlook Auburn, of course.
Let's go out west. Let's go to UCLA, LSU. 38-27, LSU a statement win here, Dan.
No. UCLA a statement win, sir.
Yeah, UCLA a statement win. Excuse me.
Yeah.
See, it's muscle memory to just
That's true.
The SEC team.
Sure.
And here we are with UCLA, I think, very much looking the part. We said it after week one against Hawaii that they looked really physical. They seemed like they were just humming on a different frequency than some of the other teams that we had seen. And again, that was the case here in week one. Now, LSU's had to overcome a lot in the last week. And we saw that Chip Kelly mentioned that in some of his post-game comments when he was down on the field, just kind of calling out that LSU's had a really rough go of it here with Hurricane Ida. But that being said, UCLA looks physical, Dan. The running game looks legit with Charbonnet and Britton Brown.
Yep.
I thought defensively they played really well, which is not something I'm all that used to seeing from this UCLA
team. No, they were very strong, yeah.
Yeah, I keep coming back to the physicality, because I just don't remember a UCLA team in recent memory. And I'm trying to think back to some of Chip's Oregon teams, if they kind of gave off the same vibes where they were just hard runners, played really physical at the point of attack. But this is a different UCLA squad for sure. No two ways about it. I don't care if they end up with 4 losses this year. This is not the easiest schedule.
Yeah.
This is a different UCLA squad. And if you're a Bruins fan, you got to be thrilled with what you've seen through 2 games.
Yeah, a lot of it's the closing, too, right? They were there last year against teams like USC and Oregon and Stanford, and that Oregon game was with a backup quarterback. So they were competitive last year. They made plays last year. They developed guys everywhere on the field last year, but they weren't closers. They just were not closers last year, and this year they have taken that step up. I mean, we saw that depth chart where they were starting all seniors on defense. They're starting full-grown men. They're starting 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds on defense, and it shows. It shows with their ability to overwhelm LSU's offensive line and make Max Johnson, for large swaths of that game, pretty uncomfortable. The LSU rushing attack was nowhere to be seen pretty much all night. LSU's speed on offense at receiver was obvious. Kayshon Boutte is one of the best receivers in the country and is going to get his against everybody. But all things considered, UCLA did a pretty good job. We saw that Max Johnson pick, which was pretty ugly. And the referee pick, if you remember, for a touchdown. That was fantastic.
Yeah, that was
just
good
execution.
That was great.
But no, UCLA on both sides of the ball. I'm still pretty concerned about DTR in terms of, like, is he a 10-win quarterback? But
he looked better this week.
He looked better. There were still moments where you're like, what is the plan here? He looks lost in the pocket, but also made plays. Also definitively made plays. But at the same time, I also wonder, is like, is he the best pure thrower on this UCLA roster? I don't know. Somebody smarter and at practice would know better than I. But it's a nitpick, because Zach Charbonnet looks like a Heisman caliber running back right now. Both on the ground and through the air, he was making plays and separating himself and breaking tackles, which is the other story of this. It's that LSU's defense still has a ways to go at probably everywhere but corner. You know, Eli Ricks and Derek Stingley are extremely strong, but this is a team that struggled reading lanes, struggled tackling in the open field, struggled communicating, and struggled with what we think is going to be a very good UCLA offense. But they have other good offenses ahead of them on their schedule. And it's appearing to be, and it's week one, it is week one, but it is appearing to be a not fully fixed issue from 2020.
Well, and I was going to come back to that for a second, because so much of the buildup to this game centered around the fact that LSU was really bad against the run last year. Remember, we talked about it. And how much do you really put stock in that, given that they had a coordinator that didn't work out? It was a weird year. They got rid of him. They're kind of starting over, blah, blah, blah. We weren't as worried about that. They were pretty bad in the passing game, too. They gave up a lot of big plays through the air in this one. So defense is going to be a work in progress. And Lord knows with the kind of offense that they're going to be up against in the SEC West, that is something they're going to need to figure out, because if they're going to go up against better defenses in UCLA, of which there are several in the West, and UCLA can shut down the running game, better damn well believe Alabama, better damn well believe A&M, somebody else is going to find a way to shut down that running attack and find a way to put it all on Max Johnson. And he can only do so much. You need some help.
A lot of
defense.
People are going to figure that out.
Yeah.
Because UCLA has a good front. They've developed into good players, but I don't think their ceiling is where Alabama's or Mississippi State's or A&M, like, it's just not there. So I think the takeaway to me right now is UCLA, just because of their ability to pop in a conference that is appearing to be in kind of shambles in terms of high level teams. Week one. But one of those power teams appeared to lose to Montana. Appeared to. So that's an issue.
All right.
No, UCLA and the job Chip Kelly has done and the patience. And I kept thinking about this, and I tweeted it out from the Solid Verbal account. What did Michigan do to lose Zach Charbonnet? Is it just Harbaugh's personality rubbing everybody the wrong way? Is it just the quarterback situation? Is it just the offensive stagnation issues that Michigan's had? Because, I mean, he ran wild against Notre Dame a couple of years ago, right? With Hassan Haskins. So he was a known commodity. I know he's from Southern California, but holy hell, in terms of guys who have popped in this first like 1.5 weeks of the season, he's right up there.
All right. Let's stay with the SEC storyline a bit. And we'll talk about Bama and then go through quickly the other action in the SEC. Alabama 44, Miami 13. This was a bloodbath, Dan, from the very jump. I don't know if we have a cross between a crock potting and a flash fry, but this was sort of that hybrid, right? This was kind of in between. This felt like it was over before it started. I watched it. Well, it was like 10-0 after the first quarter.
I would say it was 17-0 if you took a long pee. That's what it was.
It got away from Miami in a hurry. My first impression of Bryce Young, new starting quarterback for Alabama, and a lot's been written about him, right? Got the big NIL deal, excuse me. Is it worth it? Is it not worth it? I think I am on the record saying, well, you know, with some of their turnover across the board, it's going to be a problem. That's why I like Georgia. Bryce Young is going to be a problem this year for a lot of teams.
It's going to be a problem the next 2 years, at least. Yeah,
he is going to be a real problem. I don't know what the analog is for him, but he's just always sort of moving. He's very tough to square up. He seems incredibly comfortable, whether he's in the pocket or on the run. He makes good throws. He's the first Alabama quarterback to throw for 4 touchdowns in his very first start. Finished with 344 through the air. There were no answers for Bryce Young. My guess is throughout the course of this season, there won't be many coming from any other team in college football. He was absolutely superb. Alabama across the board was Alabama as we would expect. They were just no match for anybody. Nobody could hold a candle to them. There were moments early in the game where you thought, okay, Miami, maybe they can use this to get something together, but there was just no hope. There was no hope from the very beginning. It got away in a hurry, as you said, the long P, and they were down 17-0.
Yeah, I came away impressed. I mean, obviously, this defense is going to be special. And they lose. Yeah. I think it's Chris Allen, which could be a big blow to the defense. But Will Anderson, coming into the season, was a known excellent commodity, looked excellent against Miami. And what, to beat Alabama, you have to come out with such a clear plan that works and that doesn't turn the ball over and doesn't give the ball back to Alabama quickly. That's the only way to beat this modern iteration of Alabama. Is the ability to hang on to the ball and to generate big plays and to hang in early, to not let the game get away from you early. And Miami just isn't that team, at least not right now, but I don't believe they're that team, period. And I like Derek King. I like some of the guys on defense. Bubba Bolden leaves the game. He's kicked out of the game for targeting at the end of the first quarter. That was a major blow because he is that high-level guy for that defense. But it was just a Miami team that, and Alabama makes a lot of teams look it, but they look sloppy. They looked undisciplined, you know, the penalties, the inability up front along the offensive line to give De'Aaron King time. And then Alabama, and you're right about Bryce Young. And I'm positive we're going to get a quote about Bryce Young from Bryce Young after this season saying, you know, I didn't really fully know the playbook. I didn't really full, you know, I was just trying to like make plays. Yeah. And he's going to make plays all year long.
Here's the thing about him, though, and you see this a lot because the quarterback position in college football and pro football has changed dramatically.
Sure.
It's gone very hard in the direction of the mobile quarterback who can throw and you could have them do RPO stuff and whatnot. He doesn't seem chaotic.
No,
when he's doing it. He's very, and it could be because the talent in front of him is a brick wall. I don't know. My sense is that's not why. He's just good. He's calm. He's
Miami's
outside.
A real team.
No, Miami's going to be
a real ass team.
They're a top 15, top 20 team. He was just so cool, calm, and collected outside the pocket. The feet were constantly moving, and you can't square him up. He's always got his eyes downfield, and he's just, maybe Baker's the wrong comparison. I saw a little bit of Kyler Murray, but Kyler Murray was just more of a jitterbug back there. Like, he's kind of a cross between a bunch of the quarterbacks we've seen recently who have gone on to great things, but to have a guy like this at Alabama now, it's just like, can't they get a subpar quarterback for once just to keep it close for everybody else?
Sure. Even Blake Sims lit it up a few years ago. So it's just, I don't know.
Right.
The thing with any new starting quarterback is against their first start against a decent to good team. I think the only thing a realistic fan and a realistic coaching staff wants to see, comfort and confidence.
Yeah.
Comfort and confidence, you know, that poise, whatever phrasing you want to use for it. But it's comfort and confidence and a mistake-free outing. So Bryce Young obviously shows that, and he buys himself time and, you know, hits the Ohio State transfer and Jameson Williams down the sideline when they're backed up against their own end zone. I think it was a 94-yard touchdown, but Slade Bolden got involved. Like, there were guys that Bryce Young just found. And obviously, the line is good. The running backs are good. I thought Brian Robinson was pretty good. Trey Sand, like, there were good dudes. You know, Jace McClellan, I believe is his name, made some plays. And so there's no high-end, obvious guy right now on that offense. You know, John Metchie kind of disappeared for stretches. But it doesn't matter right now. And somebody's going to emerge, or some buddies are going to emerge. And that's that. That's that. I mean, I don't know how much we can go on about Alabama.
I don't think anymore.
But, no. They are who we always think they are.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, so let's stay with the SEC. I'm going to rifle through some of the scores, Dan, and then we can circle back and talk about any impressions that we had. Alabama plays in 2 weeks against the Florida Gators, who won 35-14 over FAU. We also had Texas A&M winning with their new quarterback, Haynes King, 41-10 over Kent State. Elsewhere in the West, we had Arkansas 38-17 over Rice. That one was kind of a nail biter, at least for the first half. Mississippi State, speaking of nail biters, needed to rip off 34 straight points to grab, Mississippi State needed to score 21 straight points.
Yeah, in the fourth quarter, yeah.
In the fourth quarter to negate the 34 straight points that had been scored by Louisiana Tech.
Austin Kendall. Welcome back. Mm-hmm.
We had Auburn winning by 50 over Akron.
Yeah.
On the west side. Why don't we keep it there, Dan? In the West, any impressions by what you saw from, be it Haynes King or your squad in Mississippi State?
Yeah.
I wrote down that Akron was so bad that Bo Nix only missed two passes. Any impressions of the SEC West?
No, I guess win your clunkers. That Mississippi State needed to score what it scored, and we'll see. Maybe Louisiana Tech under future Notre Dame head coach Skip Holtz is a good team. They're fine last year.
Yeah.
But Mississippi State should have more comfortably won that game. A nice balanced attack. You know, Jameer Calvin, the transfer from Wazoo, made plays, and of course, Jaden made plays as well. But yeah, sluggish fits and starts kind of thing. And hopefully it's just a week one thing. But yeah, nothing you like to see if you're somebody like this guy and me that would love for Mississippi State to take a step forward and prove him correct for his offseason analysis. Yeah.
Yeah. The Florida quarterback thing, I mentioned Florida right at the top.
That's interesting.
Yeah. The Florida quarterback thing is going to be interesting because Emory Jones was the starter and it did most of the work with his legs, did not look sharp throwing the football. And they brought in Anthony Richardson, who Dan Mullen insists is just the backup, but he's a hometown kid, had seven rushing attempts for 160 yards and a touchdown. Keep your eyes on this. We may have a backup better than the starter type
backup
of situation.
Better than the starter.
Brewing in Gainesville. And they're going to have to get it sorted out pretty quickly. As I said, they do have Alabama in 2 weeks from today. So more to come on that Florida offensive situation. Let's say
he's electric. Richardson is electric.
Really good.
I mean, it's FAU, but he is, someone to watch.
Elsewhere in the East, we had Kentucky. Will the thrill Levis, Dan, huh?
Woo! Well, Liam Cohen as well coming
Liam
in.
Cohen,
with some hype,
yeah.
But yeah, new offensive coordinator. Yeah, there was a balanced attack. Wandale Robinson getting in on the action.
Wandale is going to be a problem.
Chris Rodriguez.
They look good.
But it was what? It was Monroe.
Monroe's bad. Monroe's going to be pretty bad. But
A team should do this. A decent team should do this. A decent offense should do this against Monroe.
If you're Kentucky, and you're coming from an era in which it was mostly defense and whatever we can do with whatever quarterback we have and a really good running attack.
And please, Benny Snell, throw everything on your back.
Yeah,
please,
run it
sir.
80 times a game. If you are that Kentucky fan, you felt pretty good by what you saw. This is a reason to be optimistic. Tennessee won by 32, Joe Milton.
Yeah, Bowling Green's terrible.
Tennessee rushed for 326 as
ran
a
well.
Team, which was nice. We had Missouri
against Central Michigan. They ran well.
They ran well. 1 for 11 on third downs without Tyler Beatty. I don't know which direction
it's
this
Beatty,
game heads.
Beatty, I don't know. Yeah. Defense, it's a new defense, new coordinator. Looked out of place a little bit in the. I mean, I just scrubbed through this one quickly, but I think Mizzou will be fine. I think they'll be all right.
We had 4 touchdowns for Zeb Noland.
Yes.
46-0 over Eastern Illinois as South Carolina wins game one under the Shane Beamer era. And then to close it out, Eastern Tennessee State, East Tennessee State, some other Tennessee school, 23-3 over Vanderbilt. And Clark Lee, rough go in his first game.
Yeah, Ken Seals Honda, not getting it done for Vandy. But look, you got to give Clark Lee time. You got to give him time. But they didn't score a touchdown, did they? What was the final score?
23-3.
Yeah, that's not a great way.
Let's move over quickly to the ACC. There was a big game that took place on Friday night. Virginia Tech 17. North Carolina 10, Dan. So listen.
Yeah.
I narrowly escaped having to eat the banana peel.
because Braxton Burmeister, who you thought was Max Bortenschlager, threw an interception.
That is correct.
That's the skin of your teeth. Yeah.
That is really the only reason why. I thought he was actually pretty good in this game. He didn't rise
half,
to the level of
half.
Quote unquote shine that correct. We had defined, I guess, on the preview show. But all things considered, man. For as much shade as I was throwing at him, perhaps because I thought he was somebody else, he looked the part. He looked good. He looked really good to start. They jumped out to a 14-0 lead at half. Then they sort of went into cruise control. Sam Howell, I feel for Sam Howell. I don't know where Sam Howell ranks in terms of pro prospects this coming NFL draft in the 2022 class. My guess is he'll be one of, if not the top quarterbacks off the board. He's very good. I did get some notes of it's all on Sam Howell this year.
Yeah.
And that worries me because he had great production. He had 2 running backs get drafted into the league. He had 2 wide receivers get drafted into the league. Without that, it's a bit unclear as to where the support system is. So he was trying to do a lot of this on his own. He ended up getting sacked 6 times. He threw 3 picks.
Doing it on his own behind a not great offensive line.
No. So, you know, that being what it is on the North Carolina side, they do have some stuff to work out. This is a huge freaking win for Justin Fuente.
Yeah.
This is a big deal for him, man. We were talking about perhaps this being the year he gets canned. North Carolina was ranked, 10th going into this game, which clearly was high.
It doesn't mean anything. It's preseason, but yeah, you're right.
A huge win in Blacksburg on a Friday night. I don't know where it goes from here on out for Virginia Tech, but I thought their defense looked pretty good. Defense was an issue last year. The defense, they played pretty well on pretty much all facets of the game there. So Virginia Tech 17-10, not a high scoring affair, but just enough to get the job done. Win your clunkers. They beat a ranked team at home. So good start to the season for Fuente.
Yeah, they scored their second touchdown a little bit before the half, and then it was 3 points from that point on, really playing slow and milking clock, which I hate.
Yeah.
Because there is this, look, you're playing to win, obviously, but like there needs to be a certain amount of aggression. There needs to be a certain amount of creativity, especially since North Carolina, and look, they win the game. So this is all like, just take it with a grain of salt, but they win the game. North Carolina's an alleged conference power, and so it's a great start. I thought the defense was quite impressive, but I still don't know how they score 35 points when they need to. I just don't actually see it. They didn't run the ball that well. But look, they win this game. Crazy impressive from Virginia Tech. Amazing, amazing tie to see Enter Sandman with that full crowd.
Oh, yeah. And great to have the fans back.
Great to have the fans back, says Ty. And North Carolina, this is where one game, but 10 points against Virginia Tech, granted on the road, in a big emotional spot. Do we start having an inheritance tax situation about what Mack Brown had coming in and what he now has now? That's right. An inheritance tax by the universe, the college football gods, right? Because that the offensive skill wasn't there, that the offensive line wasn't there. One game, it's concerning. It's okay. Concerning. And recruiting has been great. And I thought that North Carolina defense made a good amount of plays. But concerning that this is the type of offense you want to run, and there aren't 3.5 guys outside of Sam Howell necessarily that can consistently get it done.
It'll make for some fun stat lines for Sam Howell this year. It will all be on Sam Howell this year.
I mean, could this be a Nick Folesian 8-4, 483 yards and 5 touchdowns and a yeah.
Could be a lot of Sam Howell in a losing effort.
He's a candidate.
All right.
I'm still relatively high on North Carolina, to be clear. The ACC is you can win a lot of games in the 2021 ACC.
Well, let's go through that and let's discuss why. I'll rifle through all of the other action in the ACC. Boston College, 51-0 over Colgate. We had Pitt also with 51 points, 51-7 over UMass. NC State, 45-0 over USF. Wake Forest, 42-10 over Old Dominion. Old Dominion's first game under Ricky Ronnie, even though he was hired over a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Syracuse wins by 20 over Ohio. UVA knocks off Bill and Mary by a 43-0 score. Then we had two other games. We had Charlotte, 31, Duke 28. It was Charlotte's first win over a Power 5 opponent. And we also had Northern Illinois, 22-21 over Georgia Tech. Rocky Lombardi on the road, Dan. Listen, Huskies could have tied it.
Yeah, Tommy Hammock. Yeah.
Could have tied it in the fourth quarter, but that's not how Big Tom Hammock rolls.
No.
Went for two, got the win on the road. Not a great loss for Georgia Tech, given the fact that their schedule is brutal.
I agree. Is
brutal. We talked maybe like 4 weeks ago about how NIU perhaps is going, for those of you not watching, I'm motioning down in like a 45-degree.
Right.
Maybe they are, maybe they aren't, but this was not the way to start the season, especially given the road that Tech has ahead. Brutal.
And especially given Jeff Sims left injured. He wasn't good when he was in there,
but
he did leave that game injured, and
right.
The Tech offense sort of went along that same route. Blah, blah, blah. Pittsburgh kills UMass. Boston College kills Colgate. You sort of destroy the teams. You should destroy Duke. I just feel bad for, Mateo Durant?
The
running back. He should be playing. He should be the next Zach Charbonnet. He should be playing for a team that rides him to wins all the time. And he's just not. And Syracuse ran the hell out of the ball against Ohio. We'll see what that actually means. But that's something. Syracuse needed to win that game, and they did.
They did. Okay. Let's go over the Big 12, Dan. I've got no fewer than five games that were really interesting to follow in the Big 12. We will, of course, start on the top line with Oklahoma 40, Tulane 35. Now, keep in mind, this is a game that was moved to Norman due to Hurricane Ida.
Yeah.
Very much an LSU-ish type of situation for the Green Wave having to play this one in Norman or just basically be away from home more than they wanted to. It got interesting down the stretch here. Oklahoma led 37-14 at half, and then they sort of went into cruise control. I have a quote here from Lincoln Riley, quote, "The second half, I think clearly our team felt like the game was over," end quote.
Right.
So what happens? Tulane pulls it to within 5. Late in the fourth quarter, they recover an onside kick. So they had a shot in this game. And Michael Pratt, who when I did the preview of Tulane, I freaking love Michael Pratt, had a monster game at quarterback. 293, 3 touchdowns, 34 rushing yards, 1 touchdown. Comes up about a yard short. yeah. on a fourth and long play with 1:55 left that turned it back over to Oklahoma. It sealed the deal. But they were in this one late. They had a chance late. I don't know what it really says about Oklahoma, to be honest with you. I think what Lincoln Riley said is accurate because Oklahoma looked good. Spencer Rattler looked fine. I mean, everything yep. was humming. It just seems like after half, when they had that big lead, they kind of went into a shell. And Tulane was not. Tulane's a good team.
Tulane was Chip Long, right? Chip Long running the offense,
right? Tulane was not willing to let this thing die, and so they came back. They made it a game. They forced Oklahoma's hand. Oklahoma had 3 points in the second half. So a good showing, I thought, for Tulane in the second half. A really good showing for Oklahoma in the first.
Disappointing for Spencer Rattler. Some of those throws, just a very much week one performance from him coming in with the sort of attention, rightfully so, that he was getting. So, yeah, I mean, look, Oklahoma won their clunker. They survived. The second half was for sure disappointing. And I don't know if it's because of how thin they are at running back right now that they were trying to just sort of milk everything. But yeah, Big 12, opening Big 12 teams, opening week for Big 12 teams, a lot of Big 12 teams. Just has been odd lately. Just real weird. You know, the Sun Belt losses last year with, you know, Kansas and Iowa State and Kansas State. Just strange things, I think.
Iowa State. Let's go to Iowa State next. 16-10 over Northern Iowa. I don't know what it is with Iowa State in these openers, but all the scoring was in the first half here, save for a field goal by Iowa State late to make it 16-10.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't a turnover thing. It wasn't a penalty thing for Iowa State. They just could not get anything going. If you've looked at the drive chart, and you probably have, it was a mess. A couple three and outs, a couple other five and outs. Like, they just, it wasn't a good showing offensively.
If you would like to be specific.
Punt, 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 touchdown, field goal, punt, touchdown, field goal, end of half, punt, 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 interception, punt, punt, field goal, interception, punt, end of game.
It was pitcher's duel of sorts.
A pitcher's duel of sorts. They're going to need to get this offense figured out before the Cy-Hawk game next weekend because Iowa, who we will talk about in time here, looked very good. Looked very good.
Yeah. Iowa State trying to play small ball to their 10 wins in their goal. Yeah.
Texas 38, Louisiana 18. I watched all of this game because I had convinced myself that Louisiana had a chance.
Okay.
Louisiana looked overmatched in this game, and they did not have any answer for Bijan Robinson. To their credit, nobody has an answer for Bijan Robinson. If they had given Bijan Robinson the ball last year, Tom Herman would still be coaching this year. But that is water under the bridge at this point. He goes for 103 and a touchdown. As a receiver, he had 73 more yards and a touchdown as well. So he's a real problem. We knew that going in. I thought Hudson Card looked really good, really
comfortable,
mature,
and confident.
Comfortable. Yep. This is a good Louisiana team. This is a good Louisiana team. They don't have the talent of Texas. There aren't a whole lot of teams that do. But this is a team that was a very interesting week one test. And I thought Texas under Sarkisian, it took them a little bit to get going, but it never felt like it was flailing out of control. It always felt like they had a pretty good handle on it. The play calling seemed like it was really thoughtful. They weren't taking chances. Hudson Card, again, just looked the part to me. So I came away very impressed by what I saw in week one. And that's not just from an eternity now of talking up Louisiana. Texas, I thought genuinely, if you watched that game and didn't know a thing about either team, you would say they were clearly far and away the better, more stable, more consistent team on the field.
Yeah, I still think offensively they need to improve along the line. They need to improve in terms of finding playmakers on the outside. You know, I thought Jordan Whittingham did a nice job, but like it was a catch for, I think it was Xavier Worthy, the California freshman at receiver, but not a lot of rhythm, not a lot of downfield. And that, I think, is a product also. Louisiana's pass defense is quite good.
Yeah.
It was, you know, finding Roschon Johnson out of the backfield. There's a lot of passes to running backs. You know, we saw the touchdown on the play that Najee Harris just destroyed teams with, where like one side of the field is, you know, the receivers are lined up on, you know, the left-hand side and they clear it out. And then Najee Harris sort of spills out to that side. Bijan Robinson ran that play to great effect for Texas yesterday. And that was the touchdown catch for him. And yeah, Hudson Card, again, echoing what we said about Bryce Young, comfortable and confident And I was also pretty impressed with what the Texas linebackers look like, what Pete Kwiatkowski's defense is trying to do, which is what Washington's defense these past few years, which is, you know, keep everything in front, keep those two big safeties back and sort of trust the defense to tackle in the open field, which they still need to improve doing. That was the issue last year. But in terms of trends, in terms of trajectory, an impressive start to win that game by 20 points heading into the matchup. It's Arkansas next week, correct?
Yep.
Good place. They're in a good place with, I think, obvious work to do.
K-State 24, Stanford 7.
Speaking of obvious work that needs to be done. Yeah.
Stanford looks dreadful on offense.
Yeah.
Dreadful on offense. If there was a game in week one where 7-0 or even 14-0 felt more out of reach for the trailing team.
Yeah.
I don't know what it would be, because Stanford was just not in this one. They played two quarterbacks. They couldn't get anything going on the ground. Skylar Thompson was back for K-State. He looked pretty good. Deuce Vaughn looked pretty good. We got the Deuce Vaughn is short comment.
Of course.
During the commentary.
He always is going to pop, yeah.
Skylar Thompson was definitely feeling a little sentimental, too. I pulled a quote from him. There's a lot that, I think this is the first touchdown of the game. Quote, there's a lot that went into that touchdown that a lot of people didn't see. A lot of time spent on my own. Mm-hmm. In the midst of a situation that once seemed very dark and stormy, to see the fruit fall from the tree, to see the sun shine a little bit, and to take a deep breath. It all worked out, and everything happened for a reason, Dan. That's from
this
Skylar Thompson.
Is the dawning of the age of Aquarius.
Good for him. Look, good for him. I'm glad he's back.
I love it. I love it. The start Phil to the Brooks year. Looked good. Malik Knowles made plays. Obviously, Duke Vaughn. Happy to see K-State win. And Stanford, yeah, there's going to be a David Shaw conversation about where this program is heading long term. If they look, week one, on the road,
week one,
body
week
clock,
one.
Whatever. Pac-12 is in shambles at the moment. Stanford could win a bunch of games. I don't know how they're going to win those games, though. That's the issue. Like, if Stanford loses this game 24-21, they pop some plays downfield, they ride a running back who carries the ball 30 times and 4 yards a clip, you're like, I see it. I see what Stanford is going for. Tanner McKee was accurate, but it was all short stuff. They don't have a receiver who pops. They don't have a running back who's in there thinking, like, okay, this guy can carry this team on their back. And like how Stanford beat Washington last year, where a team just can't get Stanford off the field. With what we saw in week one. It's just, you're trying to dust off. You're trying to use like the archaeologist's, you know, duster, his brush to be like, all right, what are we seeing here? What evidence can we find? It's tough. It's tough for me, college football indie, to find it.
All right. Elsewhere in Big 12 action, we had Texas Tech trailing at half, but ripping off 31 unanswered to win over Houston in the NERC. So nice showing for Tyler Shuck.
Easy E, by the way.
Oh, man.
Huge game for Texas Tech. Tyler Shuck was fine. He was not fine. He was good. He was good. He was accurate. Yep. And I thought the story of this game really was the Texas Tech defense in the second half.
Look
just
good.
Completely clamping down.
Look good. Baylor won by 9 over Texas State. I thought a pretty good showing on the ground for their new look offense now under Jeff Grimes.
Got by the way, can we just not gloss over the fact that we just agreed that Texas Tech's defense was the story of this one? That how often do we get to say things like that?
It's week one. Week one.
Let's just bathe in this compliment, Jacuzzi. That's all I'm saying.
Baylor wins by 9 over Texas State. TCU beat Duquesne so badly they decided after half to only play 12-minute quarters. That's a real headline.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas led by Jason Bean, Mr. Bean, rushed the field, I believe, after beating South Dakota 17-14. And we had Oklahoma State win 23-16 over Missouri State. Behind Shaggy Shane Illingworth, Dan, he's back.
He's back. Yeah. Oklahoma State's offensive line. Not back.
No.
To where it was years and years ago when it was good, because this is a kind of a bad unit right now.
Man.
Yeah, Oklahoma State is offensively in a rough... I mean, they're in the midst of... This is nothing new. This is now the third straight year of offensive concern, which is very strange to say with the Pokes.
Don't even get me started on Oklahoma State. We had a talk about this on Slack before we hit record.
Win your clunker. But yeah,
when you're not just when you're clunker. When Susan Boyle dreamt her dream in 2009. Oh,
no. Where are we going?
She was dreaming of a world in which she could wake up on a Saturday morning and Spencer Sanders wouldn't be physically questionable. Every week there's a question about Spencer Sanders. I want to see him healthy for just a full stretch. Now he's in COVID protocol and
right.
I don't mean to bag on the kid, but it's every week. Yeah. Every week it's a question of, is he going to start? Won't he start? Like, what's going on with Spencer Sanders? Shane Illingworth looked pretty good for his part. Threw for over 300 yards. I mean, he's serving in as the backup admirably. But sure. It's frustrating to me because I really want to see what Spencer Sanders can do. In a full season, fully healthy, not all his fault, but tough to watch from afar.
Yeah, agree. Did you mention West Virginia, Maryland as you were rifling?
No, we're going over to the Big Ten.
Okay, we'll do that. The Big Ten for that one. But by the way, Baylor ran really well. Texas State, sure, and was not a convincing victory, but they ran really well. That's a thing.
Let's talk about that Maryland-West Virginia game. 30-24, maybe the most fun I had watching a game.
This was fun. I didn't watch all of it, but yeah,
this is a fun game. A lot of back and forth. If you're a West Virginia fan, you probably feel like you could have won this one because the defense played really well. Letty Brown had 3 touchdowns. The problem was A, 4 turnovers, and B, yeah. Talia Tungavailoa, who went for 332, 3 touchdowns, had a pair of long ones to 2 receivers who showed out. And
big time recruit receivers in Demas and Rakeem Jarrett. Yeah.
Correct. I think this Maryland team's going to be very plucky. I love what they're trying to do. What was not clear last year was what the ceiling was for Talia Tungavailoa.
Sure.
I don't know if he's as good as his brother. He probably isn't. But he looked really good and he seems very comfortable in that offense. If nothing more, and we said this when we did our previews, if nothing more came of 2020, the fact that Mike Locksley found his quarterback was a big deal moving into this 21 season.
Sure.
And he looked really good. This game was back and forth again. If you're West Virginia, you're probably sick. You could have won this game. But Maryland ultimately gets the W at home, 30-24.
And you can find... Yeah, you're totally right about the West Virginia thing. They went away from Letty Brown for long stretches, which I didn't fully understand. The strength of this Maryland defense, I think, is in the back end. They played well last year against the pass, and I anticipate them, especially with how aggressive they looked against the Ears, to be a pretty good secondary and pass defense as well. I can see Maryland winning 7 games. There are 7 wins on this schedule.
Yep.
Now, it's a matter of consistency on offense and playing as mistake-free as possible and the defense developing, but... Look, they can go into the Iowa game undefeated. Howard, Illinois, and Kent State now lie ahead for Maryland.
Yep.
And Ohio State and Iowa are going to be very tough, and you can probably pencil those in as losses. But at Minnesota, feels toss-up-y, especially after the game last year. Indiana looks a lot more beatable. We'll get into that in a second. Penn State's going to be tough. Michigan State now looks a lot tougher than perhaps we anticipated, but we'll see. Michigan is a toss-up, but Rutgers on the road, winnable. So there are wins on this schedule for Maryland to be a bowl team. For sure.
Let's go back in time, if we can, to the Ohio State-Minnesota game that was played on Thursday night.
Yeah.
I know we're getting to this one pretty late in the podcast. We just had so much to talk about. Ohio State wins 45-31 on the road. Minnesota led 14-10 at half. And they hung around for a while in this one. But Ohio State really turned it on in the second half. And I want to talk briefly about C.J. Stroud, if we could. C.J. Stroud, new starting quarterback, Justin Fields leaves. They've clearly got a loaded quarterback room this year.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of options. C.J. Stroud's the one who gets the nod. He looked amped up early.
Sure.
He looked amped up. He missed some throws. He was overthrowing guys. It had all the hallmarks of a new starting quarterback who's just like fired up.
In a tough road spot with a lot of
tough
emotion
road spot.
As well. Yeah.
So he was high. He was long on some balls. I think he'll hit those with a little bit more experience. He did look very comfortable in the pocket, and I like the fact that he kept his eyes downfield. He was looking for the big play, and that's a good thing when you've got Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson out wide, both of whom, by the way, had really nice nights.
Yeah, even though they were missing on the field for wide stretches for I don't know why, but yeah.
they had the stats, let's say, at the end of the game. Each of them had a touchdown. The final line for Stroud was 294, 4 touchdowns and a pick, which is a pretty good start.
Does Joel does Joel Klatt like calling touchdowns tugs more than he used to? Or is that just something I glossed over in the past? Because
tugs
in his two games, yeah, he's been calling both in the, he did Wisconsin Penn State as well with yeah. Gus. They did both of these games. He's been big on using tugs. As a, yeah. I mean, that's a thing that people call it, but I just feel like he is really leaning into the tugs nickname for touchdowns.
See, the thing that I noticed with Klatt is that he's really leaned into calling one player on every team, quote, maybe the best player in America.
Yeah, maybe.
He's really leaned into that as
maybe.
Well.
Maybe.
Very optimistic gentleman. Ohio State wins this one. This wasn't a huge surprise. If you grab the line at -13.5, you feel much better than if you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
The bummer news here is that Mo Ibrahim went down.
Yeah, and he was the offense for large parts of this game for Minnesota. Yeah.
Yeah. 30 for 163 and two touchdowns. I saw somewhere that he may have popped an Achilles. I have not been able to confirm that, but it looked like a bad injury. And that would be a bummer for him because he was really going to be one of the focal points for this offense. So we'll just have to wait and see until more comes out there.
Something underscored in this game, right? If you're going to take down a team as electric as Ohio State is at their best, there has to be an element to your team that, How are we going to score quickly? Who is somebody that can score quickly? Who is somebody with a little bit of space and a little bit of wiggle that can score quickly? We saw it with, you know, it wasn't always happening with Purdue, but they had Rondale Moore when they took down Ohio State. And Iowa, they don't necessarily have that, but they had it that day with Nate Stanley and that team, that ability that year against Ohio State and forcing the turnovers. And I appreciated when the Gophers went for it on 4th and 1 on like their own 29. It's like, yeah, what do you have to lose? Obviously, you can't match up player for player with Ohio State. And that it resulted in a big Mo Ibrahim run. But that to me was what I also noticed. They were without Chris Ottman-Bell, right? Minnesota, their number one receiver. That element to their ability. And when they beat Penn State a couple years ago, they had those two NFL receivers. And that was the big difference maker in that first half. And so that, I think, is going to be the lesson of upsetting these teams with the high-level talent. Is you're going to have to take some chances and you're going to have to be confident in finding one or two of those guys on your roster. Otherwise, you can't beat these teams with 12, 14, 15 play drives. You just can't.
Iowa 34, Indiana 6.
Guess who just got
murdered? Woo! Okay, Iowa scored twice in the first 2 minutes and 15 seconds.
Yes.
First on a long touchdown run by Tyler Goodson. Next on a 30-yard interception returned by Riley Moss. Riley Moss, by the way, picked off another one and ran that one back for a touchdown a quarter later. So he had two. It was a nice game for him.
Do we want to stick with Riley Moss, or how do you feel about Miley Ross? Riley Moss or Miley Ross?
Ooh. I'm okay with Riley Moss.
You're okay with sticking with his real name?
I am.
I like Miley Ross. I don't know.
Whatever you want to call him.
I'm just here to confuse you over the course of the year. If he like really pops as an All Big Ten type player, I would love.
I'll
you
do that on my
accidentally
own.
Say Miley Ross.
You don't even have to assist on that.
Fair. Okay.
This is sort
what
of
your
the
takeaways.
Story for,
otherwise,
this is sort of the story for Indiana. This whole game. This is the story for Indiana. They just struggled to get anything going offensively. Michael Penix was back from the injury, threw three picks. Probably should have had a fourth.
Yep.
They just weren't in this one. They weren't in this game at all. Iowa looked pretty good on the ground. Spencer Petras was like, okay.
Petras.
He was Petras. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, there was nothing like spectacular about the Iowa offense, but they just did not relent at all and took it to Indiana, win by 28. Great way to open the season for the Hawkeyes.
Yeah, I was going to say they only scored 20 points on offense because of the picks. Like, that's fine. They won a game 34-6. Get points however you can.
Yeah.
And yeah, the Tyler Goodson one run was impressive, but after that, the running game was largely pedestrian for Iowa, but get points however you can. And Iowa got themselves some points and a comfortable win over a ranked Big Ten team. Great. Huge day.
We had Michigan State also winning 38-21. Kenneth Walker III. I hope he's on
transfer.
On the dude alert.
He's a top. Yeah.
Yeah, the Wake transfer. What a game he had, man. 264, four touchdowns. Michigan State was up 21-0 till the final minute of the first half. And no one really saw this coming. The line was 3. Michigan State finished with 5-11 in total offense. They ran the ball really well. And it was the reason that Northwestern lost was not because Hunter Johnson underperformed.
No, he was pretty good. It was not a downfield passing attack for either one of these teams. These were quarterbacks squarely within like a 14-yard radius. But he was fine. He was totally fine, but just inconsistent.
Michigan 47-14 over Western Michigan. Rutgers.
You can't just gloss over the Kenneth Walker thing, though. That's a celebration. Come on.
Oh, it is a celebration.
We got to celebrate. Yeah. I mean, Michigan State coming out on the road against the West champion from last year and stomping them they did. I don't think they have a quarterback.
No.
You know, I don't trust Peyton Thorne or Anthony Russo, but if they're scoring damn near 40 without a downfield passing game, so that's awesome. Go green, go white? That's great.
No, they were great. Kenneth Walker looked every bit the part.
Just making sure. We really should, again, compliment Jacuzzi. Let's take a soak.
Elsewhere in the great state of Michigan, we had the Wolverines 47-14 over Western Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Ronnie Bell went down with a knee injury in that game. Had to be carted off. I have not
seen. After popping, though. After looking so great.
Yeah. Yeah. Have not seen what official word is there, but that could obviously be a pretty big blow to lose their most reliable wideout.
Oh, yeah.
We had Rutgers with a 60 burger, 61-14 over Temple. Mm-hmm. We had Nebraska destroying Fordham, New York's one true team, 52-7. We had Purdue knocking off Oregon State. Jack Plummer with a nice game, 30-21. David Bell should also be on the dude list. We may retire him as a dude soon.
He might have to be dude retired. He's just so consistently great.
And Illinois follows up its huge home win over Nebraska by losing also at home to UTSA, 37-30.
Roadrunners are tough. I'm just telling you, they're tough. I don't know how many games they're going to win, but they're going to be a tough out and letdown spot, obviously, for Illinois. Of those games that you mentioned, the things that popped, Cade McNamara, pretty good. Looked comfortable and confident. I don't know what the ceiling is for this Michigan offense. I saw J.J. McCarthy, the 5-star freshman, came in and threw an absolute dime like across the field, kind of Zach Wilson style. So the arm talent there has a pretty interesting ceiling for the Wolverines if they're able to, you know, surround him with what he needs to be surrounded by. But yeah, they ran well, both Hassan Haskins and was it Corum? Blake Corum, the other running back. Yep. So that was encouraging. Again, it's one of those things where like I was texting with a Michigan buddy of mine and I was like, how are you feeling? He was like, I feel fine. They comfortably beat Western Michigan. And I was like, no. If your team comfortably wins a game, they should win comfortably in week one. That's amazing. That's an incredible, incredible thing. So Caleb Ellaby and, you know, Western gets hurt at receiver. That, I mean, obviously it was a setback, but it was largely not going to be a competitive game either way. I have nothing to add about Nebraska Fordham beyond, let me get this guy's name correct, Ryan Greenhagen. Did you see this line? 30 tackles. Hope we got an ice bath.
Yeah.
Hope we got an ice bath after that game. So I am good for Nebraska.
Speaking of the compliment, Jacuzzi, holy cow.
30 tackles, the compliment. I am so sorry and both so happy that I am just going to make compliment Jacuzzi a thing that we're going to soak in all season long when guys deserve it.
Well,
the visual is not great.
Speaking of that, is there a compliment Jacuzzi spot for the Pac-12 outside of UCLA?
Sure.
Who? Okay. Who gets it? Who gets that spot? Drake London?
You're talking about a specific team that can collectively soak that in my compliment Jacuzzi?
A specific team, let's say. Sure.
Utah comfortably beat Weber State and Charlie Brewer looked fine. Chaz Brewer.
Okay, thank you.
Arizona's like there's a couple teams that took care of business. Colorado was actually not that impressive in a 35-7 win against Northern Colorado. As I'm looking over this slate, it was ugly. There were individual player performances.
Yeah.
But
there are three classes of teams in the Pac-12.
Even USC, like they win by 23 and you're just like, I guess the defense was pretty good, but on offense, they didn't look sharp.
No, they
did. Drake London.
Yeah. So look, three classes of teams in the Pac-12. You've got UCLA. You've got the teams that won and the teams that didn't.
Yeah, correct.
We already talked about UCLA. Let's talk about the teams that won. Let's talk about your Oregon Ducks. So I'll go through these very quickly. Oregon wins 31-24 over Fresno. We'll talk about that next.
Sure.
USC 30-7 over San Jose State. Really big game for Drake London. 12 for 137, something crazy. Great game. You mentioned Utah disposing of Weber State 40-17.
Mm-hmm.
41-14 ASU over Southern Utah. Colorado 35-7 over Northern Colorado. Walk me back through what the hell went down with Oregon. How was this game close?
It was getting off the field far too often on offense. I thought Anthony Brown looked confused and out of sync. The offensive line struggled at times. Fresno State, I think Fresno State's a pretty good team. I think they can contend for the Mountain West this year, especially with how uneven a lot of the teams that we thought were going to be pretty good. You know, Boise State jumps out to a huge league. San Diego State needs to come back against what was New Mexico State. Like, some of the teams in the Mountain West, San Jose State, just I figured they would have been a little bit better against SC, even in a losing effort. But Fresno's pretty good. Jake Haener started his career at Washington. So did Ty Jones, who had a couple catches. They're well coached. But really, the story to me was how out of sorts Oregon looked on offense. Anthony Brown looked like he had happy feet at times. He was sidearming and rifling and overthrowing open guys at times. And, you know, I was texting with an Oregon buddy. And I was like, I'm pretty sure Anthony Brown just tried to run a draw while the rest of the team was running a screen.
Yeah.
Like, there were just very pronounced week one issues with the passing game, and they got going on the ground later on, and they were rotating in offensive linemen. The bright spot, obviously, early on, Kayvon Thibodeaux was incredible. He forces a fumble that results in a touchdown a couple plays later on a short field. He leaves the game with what appears to be a mild sprained ankle in a walking boot, but I guess x-rays were negative. So ahead of next week against Ohio State, who knows what type of situation he'll be in physically. That's a positive thing. Noah Sewell, another top player, forces a fumble and another short field. So they get 14 points off a short field, but like, they just, you know, they got a touchdown right before half. They just couldn't get off the field on defense enough. And it's week one. They won their clunker. But as you know, I was tweeting this out because this is what I do during games. I'm irrational. I still feel this way. I don't think Anthony Brown is the long-term this season answer at quarterback for Oregon if they have designs of winning this conference. But Washington doesn't look that good. Stanford doesn't look that good. The North doesn't look that good.
No.
UCLA looks good. USC, once again, looks beatable, as Oregon has done these past couple of years, if they're performing on a high enough level. But in terms of what the goals are for this Oregon program, it is clear that they are not going to play their best football on offense with Anthony Brown running the show, to me. But a great run to win this game, by the way, on fourth and short.
Great
incredible
run, to win
run
the game.
From Anthony Brown. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of that's very valid.
Yeah.
If you watch the highlights, you don't get any of that because some of the highlights were really good for Anthony Brown.
Totally.
Run, he had some nice throws. Like in those brief highlight packages, he definitely looks the part. But
sure,
there's a lot that happened in between that I think helped make this game as close as it was.
By the way, when Oregon had to drive like at least 50 yards, it was punt, short field, touchdown, punt, punt, good drive, downs, punt, fumble, punt, field goal until that last touchdown. This is a Mountain West team. Oregon was Fresno-esque, for better or for worse.
The other class in the Pac-12 is Washington. It's Cal. It's Arizona. It's Wazoo. Mm-hmm. It's these teams that lost to teams that they probably shouldn't have. Now, Arizona makes sense. You get Arizona losing to BYU. And Jaren Hall looked pretty good in his first start. But we had Montana. 13-7 over Washington. That was a later.
They did have a spring season of two games. Get into that
games.
Rhythm.
Fear the
grit. Spring season. Yeah.
We had Nevada behind a really good game from Carson Strong, knocking off Cal 22-7.
Yeah.
We had Utah State, Blake Anderson, his first game for the Utah
Logan
State
Bonner.
Aggies, getting the W over Wazoo. What do we make? Like, Washington losing's, I think, a pretty seismic result in week one.
Sure.
Because outside of the Oregon Ohio State game next weekend, Washington squaring off against Michigan was one of those other matchups that looked like it would get relatively top billing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was a look ahead. I don't know if they just stink, but Washington did not look good in this game at all. And losing, now being able to score 7 points against Montana. I mean, we were talking Washington up as a contender.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a pretty big deal to lose in the way that they did here in week one.
Pretty hard to see Jimmy Lake as the Washington head coach in like 2023 at the moment. Pretty difficult, maybe 2024. You have all offseason long to get your team ready. To not that they're, you know, in the weight room every day looking at Montana film, but all offseason long to figure out a game plan for what this team is going to look like on offense. And they have a good offensive line in front of Dylan Morris. They have one of the best tight ends in the country in Kate Otten. They don't have the receiving talent. They lost a bunch of transfer, whatever. They've got talent on defense to stop Montana. And like, this is what we got. This is what we got with months and months of Washington finally getting a full offseason under a new head coach. And Montana's like an okay FCS team. They're pretty good for an FCS team. This is Washington as a double-digit favorite. What, 17, 18-point favorite, 20-point favorite? This is what we got. Washington's just not a team that's going to challenge for anything significant under Jimmy Lake if what we saw yesterday is an indication of where this program is at. Because they have a quarterback of the future in Sam Heward, but the recruiting isn't there.
No.
So if the recruiting's not there, then the development needs to be there. And I'm not sure they developed into a winning team this past offseason. It doesn't look like it.
I'm looking at Phil Steele's 2021 list of most surprising teams. Number one, Washington Huskies. He wasn't wrong about that. This is a hell of a result to start the year.
Yeah.
I'll give Phil credit. He got that one right.
Yeah. Definitions have spectrums.
All right.
By the way, Cal losing to Nevada is like, Nevada's pretty good.
Nevada's pretty good.
Yeah.
We called that one out as well.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, we had UCF coming from behind to knock off Boise State.
Yeah, Isaiah Bowser.
36-31. That was a very fun game.
By the way, Dylan Gabriel, both the reason for losing and for winning. You see his 100-yard pick that he just politely tossed to the Boise player. He returned it for 100 yards.
I saw.
Boise has a ways to go in terms of offensive consistency, and good to see UCF hang in that one.
Cincinnati wins handily over Miami, Ohio, 49-14.
Yep.
Coastal Carolina, 52-14 over the Citadel. And throw your hands up for the Holy Crusaders, Dan.
Oh, man.
38-28 over the UConn Huskies. UConn not off to a bit of an auspicious start, let's say, after taking a year off, taking the gap year in 2020.
Should also mention in the preview, I was high on the Jacks of South Dakota State taking on Colorado State.
Yeah.
Steve Adazio, how's it going there? How's Colorado State?
Not going great.
Yeah. I mean, South Dakota State's a good team. They're a legit good team, but things have not started off well for Colorado State and the Rams. Yeah.
That is all I got. Do we want to do dudes?
I would love to do dudes.
A little bit longer show than usual
today. It's okay.
But it's all right. Okay. We got a lot to discuss. We're very excited to be back doing this. Continue.
Kenneth Walker, Riley Moss, or Miley Ross, depending on where you stand for Iowa. Carson Strong for Nevada looked fantastic against Cal. Anthony Richardson, backup quarterback for Florida. Isaiah Bowser, I just mentioned. Drake London popped for USC. David Bell, Purdue, might need to be retired soon. Zach Charbonnet for UCLA. Nakobe Dean is who I selected, but there were a lot of pieces of that Georgia defense that could be named there. Will Anderson for Alabama. Mo Ibrahim for Minnesota. Hope he's okay, but fingers crossed. I just gave the entirety of the Penn State secondary for coming up big and helping the win come along. And then Ryan Greenhagen, 30 tackles. And sorry, that's not my final one. Ryan Greenhagen, fantastic. Ren Heffley.
Ren, my boy.
10 passing touchdowns, I believe, some sort of record for Presbyterian.
He got it in the third quarter. 7:54 left in the third quarter.
Yeah.
He hit a 49-yard touchdown pass. It was his 10th passing touchdown of the game. It's a new FCS single game record.
Kevin Kelly, the new coach at Presbyterian, is the former Arkansas never punt coach.
Okay.
84 points for Presbyterian. He comes over. So his name was even floated by some writers, like, should he go to Kansas? Like, well, let's take some steps between. Is it the Pulaski Academy? Am I making that up in Arkansas? Presbyterian. Watch them on ESPN Plus, probably. I don't know. So there's that. Incredible.
Absolutely incredible. So look, this is fun. It's great to be back doing this.
Yeah.
Week one is officially in the books. Don't forget to stop by on Wednesday
for the public feed. If you are a Patreon Verballer, you can go out, of course, to verballers.com, excuse me, and yes, sign up for the Patreon. You'll get all of these shows early. We're recording this now on a Sunday. Some folks are watching it live. Others will get it as soon as we can cut it here on Sunday afternoon. The rest of the public gets it on Monday. And it's the same deal for all of our shows. Wednesday show you'll get on Tuesday. Friday show you'll get on Thursday. Nonetheless, week two is going to be something now over the next couple days that we build towards. There is a Notre Dame game being played on Sunday evening. There is a Louisville Ole Miss game being played on Labor Day, which we'll discuss when we get to that Wednesday show. So the weekend's not officially through yet at time of recording, but for all intents and purposes, week one is officially in the books. I think a great start to the new season. Great to have the fans back as per usual. Great to have so much energy around these games and build into hopefully a more normal season. It honestly felt good to just watch it and feel like I was watching the same old game that I've been so used to over the last however many years.
Yeah, we fancy like how, how, and how, how, and the Oreo, Oreo, Oreo. Yeah, that's all I have to add, because that's all it that is going to be added to our ears for the next 4 months.
For that guy over there, Mr. Applebee's, Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thank you so very much for downloading, for listening, for supporting the show. We'll be back at you in just a few short days. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.